still rocking after all these years.
This is the story of my rock and roll butler.
This is it, the show that started it all. Often imitated, but never equal. From San Francisco, USA, online since 2004, it's the one and only Rock and Roll Geek Show with the original Rock and Roll Geek, Michael Butler.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Geek Show. My name is Michael Butler. Thanks a lot for joining me. I really appreciate it. Today is Thursday, May 30th, 2019, and it's 7:21 when I'm recording this intro. I just got off the phone with Jim Dandy Mangrum from Black Oak, Arkansas. I just got the new album called Underdog Heroes, and as soon as I put it on, it brought a smile to my face. Something about Jim Dandy's voice, it just really makes me happy. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to contact him and see if I can get him on the Rock and Roll Geek Show. What have I got to lose? I had no idea what to expect. I mean, I know nothing about his personality as off stage or whatever. And he could have been mean or I don't know. Who knew what to expect? But I just said, fuck it. I'm gonna contact him. So I reached out to his people or to him, and I was told, here's my people, and contacted the girl in his band named Sammy B. Sammy B, what, I don't remember her last name. Sammy B, but she's the woman who is singing in his band now. And so I contacted her, and she said, no problem, brother. Let's make it happen. So it happened. And I just got off the phone with him, and man, what a class human being Jim Dandy Mangrum is. God, that guy was such a badass rock star. Back in the 70s, they were the biggest band in the world for like 5 years in the 70s, from like 71 to 76 or 77. There was nobody bigger than Black Oak, Arkansas. I mean, of course, the Stones and bands like that. They were on top of the world. They were like one of the top five money-making bands in the 70s. So what the hell? I'm going to try to contact Jim Dandy and talk about the new Black Oak, Arkansas album, Underdog Heroes. So I just got off the phone with him, and man, he was a really nice guy, and a little hard to keep up with, because he's 71 years old, and he's a country boy. Let me tell you, he is a country boy. And he talks with a deep country. You think I talk with a country accent? Jim Dandy, deep South country accent. But man, what a sweet human being he is. God. It was such an honor to talk to this guy. I don't know if you really learned that much from this interview, but hopefully you will get a kick out of it, because I certainly did. Really nice guy. We attempt to talk about as much of the history of Black Oak, Arkansas as we possibly can. And so that's what you're getting tonight, friends. Before we go into the interview, I'm going to play a song, but I also need to thank some people. First of all, thank you everybody who donated to the show, but I need to especially thank, pulling up this big, huge thing here, I need to especially thank Dave Franco from Chicago, the Chicago chapter of the Rock and Roll Geek Show. He sent me the Nazareth Loud and Proud box set. This thing weighs about fucking 10 pounds. It's got, I haven't opened it yet, but it's limited to 5,000 copies of this thing, 5,000 box sets. It's full of stuff. It's got a bunch of vinyl. It's got six vinyl LPs. It's got 32 CDs. Hardback book with photos, extensive notes, band interviews. It's got tour programs. It's got a bunch of 7 inches in it. Thank you, Dave Franco, for sending me that. I really appreciate it. And also want to thank a new donor, Thomas Olson, for I think he donated like $20, $25. So everybody else who donated, thank you so much as well. I will name all of you by name on the next episode, which I'm going to hopefully do maybe on Saturday. So you're getting Jim Dandy interview tonight, and hopefully another show on Saturday. And so I'm going to play a song from the new Black Oak, Arkansas album called Underdog Heroes. And then we will go right into my about a little bit over an hour talk with the great Jim Dandy Mangrum, a legend, the fucking legend, Jim Dandy. I don't know what to say except thank you, Jim Dandy Mangrove, for doing the Rock and Roll Geek Show. I really appreciate it. And thank you for listening, friends. I hope you enjoy it. Here's the first song on the album. It's a cover. I knew of this song from Pat Benatar. It's called Don't Let It Show. I forget who originally did it. But Don't Let It Show. As soon as I put the Black Oak Arkansas album, Underdog Heroes, on, this song came on and I was smiling. And the album is surprisingly good. I mean surprisingly good. So go out and buy it if you like it. It's called Underdog Heroes. It's on Cleopatra Records. I will post a link to, like I said, on rockandrollgeek.com where you can purchase the album. Thank you for listening, friends. Rockandrollgeek.com is where you can find the show. Send me an email if you like the interview. rockandrollgeek@gmail.com. Find me on the Facebook, R&R Geek. Find me on the Twitter, R&R Geek. Find me on the Instagram, rockandrollgeek, don't ask. Here's Don't Let It Show, then right into the great Jim Dandy Mangrum.
No matter what they do to you, don't let them have the pleasure. You know they're getting to you at all. If it's getting harder to face every day, don't let it show you. Don't let it show you. It's getting harder to take what they say. Just let it go. Just let it go. And if it hurts when they mention my name, say you don't know me. And if it hurts when they say I'm to blame, I'm always to blame. Taking the easy way out. Keep it inside of you. Don't give in. Don't tell them anything. Don't let it. Don't let it show. To say, oh, say you don't care, oh, say you don't care. Even though you want to believe there's a way, I won't be there, I won't be there. Say I'm to blame, they'll never own you. Ah, ah, ah. Even though you feel you've got nothing to hide, keep it inside of you. Don't give in, don't tell them anything. Don't let it, no, don't let it.
Hello?
Hello, this is Michael Butler. I'm calling to interview Jim Dandy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hold on. I'll put you on the phone with him.
Okay, thanks.
Give me 2 seconds.
Okay.
This is Sammy, by the way, Michael. I'm sorry.
Hi, Sammy. Nice to meet you.
Hi. How are you?
Good. I love the new album, by the way.
Oh, thank you, man. Jim and Ricky are the masterminds behind it all, but we're all proud of it. We really are.
Oh, she's a new star.
Yeah. Sammy sounds great.
Hello?
Hello, Jim Dandy. How are you?
This is Mr. Michael Butler.
Yes, it is. I can't tell you, sir, how much of an honor this is to have you on the Rock and Roll Geek Show. I really appreciate you coming on.
Oh, man, I appreciate you thinking it's an honor. If it means anything to you, it means everything to me.
I love the new album. Are you still in Black Oak, Arkansas? I mean, the town Black Oak?
No, but, you know, to tell you the truth, I'm in Memphis, but I'm waiting to move back to Black Oak.
Memphis. How long have you been living in Memphis?
On and off again. You know, Memphis was the main city, you know, more than Little Rock was. We're from northeast Arkansas. Uh-huh. But Memphis was only like 69 miles from the Memphis Bridge to Black Oak, about an hour away. But it was less than 300 people, still is. But I'm fixing to move back there, the place I used to run from, like it was escaping from jail or something.
Yeah.
You know, my kids thought it was really boring like I did, but it's a safe place for them. We got a year-old baby now, and I just miss home. I want to go back there. It seems peaceful to me now instead of boring.
Yeah, that's the way it is when you get older. The small towns, although Memphis is not a huge town, the small towns, though, when you get older, it's nice to go back. To
yeah, but it's got, places. It's like Old West here, man. You know, they got a t-shirt in a head shop called Wizards, and I went in there and it said, "Welcome to Memphis, Duck," with a 9mm white silhouette on a black
really?
Shirt.
Yeah.
And they've gotten pretty wild here. It used to be, they weren't as crazy as Detroit, but now Detroit is not as crazy as Memphis.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is where I still love to come and record. And we did this album and mixed it down in Royal Studios, Willie Mitchell Studios. And Boo Mitchell was part of our three-man producing team when we mixed it down, and I knew him since he was 12.
Oh, yeah, nice.
And I used to stop by there and see him and his dad and everything, and when he was 12, he told me, he said, "Someday I'm going to be a producer and produce rock and roll, not just rhythm and blues, and don't produce Black Oak, Arkansas." And when we did this album, I told him, I said, "I always remember that." But no boys I knew, no matter what color they were, I'm sure they're going to produce us someday. That's pretty remarkable.
When you guys lived in Black Oak, Arkansas, that was probably the closest place to play gigs a lot, right? Memphis?
Well, we didn't hardly go that far. And we were nobody when you get Jonesboro, 19 miles away. That was the big city, you know, nearly near as big as Memphis. But and when we went to Memphis, we were not your local garage band, because Black Oak didn't have no garages. We practiced the first time in a Venus elevator. We were terrible, too. That concrete and tin just magnified it.
Were there places to play in Black Oak, Arkansas, when you guys were starting?
No, and there still isn't. Huh. But there's, you know, back then, we went to roller rinks and Legion Huts and stuff like that, and then about like the venues. And then also, you know, you just play where you can. It's gotten even harder on young people nowadays, because if you got, you know, tobacco and alcohol and stuff like that, you can't have no place to play. And a lot of talented young people out there, just blowing my mind how good they are.
Yeah. You know, in the 70s, a lot of big bands played skating rinks back in the 70s. I remember when I lived in Jacksonville, Florida. That's where I grew up. And Ted Nugent played at a skating rink in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah, we did skating rinks too after we had records and stuff. Remember one with Edgar Winter. Johnny was actually a real good friend of mine, but Edgar, I thought Edgar didn't like me at all, because he wasn't his person. Later he told me, "You just missed out on being my friend, because I always liked you." I'm just not as personable as Johnny. And I said, "Well, I guess I wasted my time again, Edgar." Well, I remember that night, it had so much humidity come up from, it wasn't a roller rink, it was an ice rink, because they had it covered up with boards, but the ice made it had a cloud inside the building. It was raining inside the building, because it was pretty hot in there. But we'd play any place they let us back then, you know, and I still am that way. I love to play. I mean, they should never let me get away with it the first time.
Man, I got to tell you, when I was a kid, I wore, I don't know if you like this album or not, but I had Street Party, and I wore that album completely out, and I just pulled it out.
And, you know, this is the second time in 2 days that somebody's mentioned Street Party. I was doing interviews. The record company's got me doing interviews, a lot of interviews, because we've had 100 reviews, and they're all rave reviews. That's never happened to us, okay? I've got 3 gold albums, 1 platinum, but they were all gradual, and nothing ever... Nobody talked this good about us before. And I'm so happy about it because me and Ricky, that's the first one we produced. But I'm glad you like it. I really am.
Well,
you know, it's a special album. It had a lot of heart in it and a lot of closure for like Ruby's mother. Her name's Hank, short for Henrietta. And she has a truck stop in Toledo, Ohio. But she thought everybody forgot about her little girl and how talented she was. I said, man, can't do that. She died in 1994. We've been playing that song, Ruby's Heartbreaker.
Yes.
I mean, that's actually Mark Farner's Heartbreaker off the Grand Funk Record. He was a great friend of mine, and he knew Ruby also. I asked him if we could use some music, you know, change the words a little bit. And he said, yeah, go ahead. I hated the girl I wrote that about because she broke my heart. And he knew Ruby too. But we played it that many years since 1994, and our fans have heard it almost every show. And a lot of them have really expressed how happy they are that we finally put it on an album. But you see there how mature a song can get when you played it every night. You play, you know, since 94.
Yeah.
And we're kind of proud of it.
That's one of my favorite songs on the album. Man, when I was a kid, Ruby Starr was so gorgeous for me. I mean, I was like a 15-year-old kid, and you know how 15-year-old kids
are. A short little dress, wasn't it, with a perfect ass.
Oh, man. Something else. There was
she was a talented Jew. She had a great voice. She was a good girl.
She had a great voice, and she was so on stage. She just had such a presence, and she had such confidence. And
that's the same way with Sammy. I mean, they would have loved one another because both times when I found a girl that when I see a woman, a lady with the determination and the will that to keep on, you know, never give up, give in or give out, and it's harder on women, and especially if they're pretty, you know. Because both of them, every band they'd ever been in, all the girlfriends and all the wives had to fire her. She can't say, get her out of here. they couldn't help it. They just get so jealous. They see Sammy or Ruby. But they would love one another. And Sammy, she loves her.
Where did you find Sammy? She sings on the new album. And she's taken the part of Ruby Starr. How did you find her?
What is that again?
How did you find Sammy?
She was here in Memphis, but she's from New Orleans, and she's gorgeous, yeah. And she's 5 foot tall, and definitely a handful, but she dances great, sings, our voices sound good together. You know that part on Ruby's Heartbreaker, where at the end, where we're doing the ahs and stuff?
Yeah.
About the third change in it, she reminds me of Ronnie Spector.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Much. You're probably too young to remember Ronnie Spector, Ronnie and Ronettes.
Yeah, I remember.
But she got a lot of heart, yeah. And I'm so glad that I did find her because she's learned a lot and she's helped me a lot because she's older than she looks. She looks about 25, but she's 35. She just had her first boy and had 2 girls before that, but she's proportionate.
Is she your girlfriend?
Well, we're engaged, but it's like I'm not really letting nobody know that. Don't put that in there because everything is carried away once they hear something like that. Yeah. You know, it'll be carried away to where it might ruin it. I'm lucky she said yes.
Yeah, you don't want to jinx it. My favorite part on the album is when she says, "I'm on the streets with Jim Dandy." It's great.
You know what happened? The truth of that is, I was at the part of that song. I was singing it myself, going. She's out on the street with Jim Dandy. She hates when anybody sings third person. I'm one of those people like between me and the Killer and Dick Bopper and people like that. There's not very many that sing with songs with their name in it, you know.
Yeah.
But she didn't like it when I sang it that. So she just jumped up in front of me and says, "Now I'm out on the streets with Jim Dandy." I said, "Darling, I love it. You just turned into another Jim Dandy song."
Yeah, there you go. It's great, man. I put that album on and... The first thing that happened, as soon as I put it on, a smile came to my face. And there's one thing about all the Black Oak Arkansas, when you hear your voice, it is impossible, at least for me, to not have a smile when you hear Jim Dandy sing. It's such a recognizable voice.
It's very flattering. Thank you. I love what I do. I really love it a lot. I mean, I learned how to sing so I could talk between songs on the microphone. I admit that. But I've learned more and more. But now I can sing. Back when I was on top of the world, we was one of the top five moneymakers in the world.
Yeah,
between
72
and 77. I had a bronchial condition, but two-pack-a-day smoker. Never smoked a cigarette because I was smoking hash with the guitar players. Now, the manager wouldn't let me have no time off. And so... but they still loved us anyway. You know, that one of the worst reviews I'd ever get was if they said I sounded like Captain Beefheart. I didn't like Captain Beefheart. But, you know, I can sing now, if it matters. I'm not sure if it does or not. But this album, it's got a lot of heart, you know. And also we had closure for Ruby on that. But we also had closure for Tommy Bolin's. Song of his on the last two or three albums we had, and his brother was my drummer for 35 years, would still be one my drummer right now. Said he had a heart attack last year, had to get a pacemaker put in. He's doing a lot better, and the doctor said maybe soon he can come back out with us. But right now we've got a great drummer, that's Garrett Marshall, and his daddy was a drummer for Josephus, for Hank Jr. But he's not playing no country. This boy is, he's got feathers hanging out of his ear, out of his hair and stuff like that. And he slams, man. And so did Johnny. I mean, Johnny's like a Bolin. Tommy Bolin could play drums about as good as he could guitar. Huh. And so did Johnny. You know, they were just multi-talented and way too good looking. I mean, you know, there was girls. It's hard to get girls to stay with, be their girlfriend when they were young, because they were so damn pretty. They didn't want no boyfriend that was as pretty as they were.
Didn't you have a heart attack?
Well, I had a minor coronary in 1980 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I think it was a Jerry Garcia syndrome, because I was cleaning out, you know. I'll never totally quit smoking marijuana because it don't make me 10 foot tall and bulletproof. And now Arkansas has gone to medical and I'm moving back home. But, you know, Willie's got Willie weed. I think we should have Holy Smoke or something like that. But just, you know, it's just... All I can say is this has been the greatest adventure of my life. And I've had a lot of things happen that a lot of people think is unfair. They talk to me about it all the time. You know, we had that white collar crime type of thing going on when we worked so much, we didn't stay home enough to keep up with the books. We paid for our education that way. We had $4.4 million just vanished. And I blame myself for that. And when I do the people that did it, because I allowed it to happen. I'm a man. I take my own blame. And they say I'm always to blame. Did you hear it on Don't Let It Show? They couldn't believe it in California that when they saw the list of songs we were going to do on the album, and one of them was a Alan Parsons song off of iRobot, Don't Let It Show.
Yeah.
Of course, he had all keyboards and had a solo at the end of it. And he even told me, he said, I don't know why I changed the chords at the end of that song, because he really likes what we did. We just stayed on the chord progression that he had, and it was real soulful. But, it's kind of medicinal, and one of the parts says, say you don't know me, and if smile when they say I'm to blame, because I'm always to blame, because that's not what he said. He doesn't ever own you, I think is what he said. But and doing Ruby's Heartbreaker satisfied me a lot, because I love her. She died of an inoperable brain tumor,
yeah,
and that's
a
painful death.
I remember.
And she was a great person. And I loved her, and I loved her mama, and I wanted to give her and her nephew and niece all of them closure. You know that everybody hadn't forgotten how talented and how great she was.
Did you always sing the way you sing, or did you? I mean, because your voice is like it's a completely original sounding voice, and it's unlike anybody else, and it's not. Have you always sang that way, or did you sing different at another time?
Well, when I smoked too much hash, I didn't sing like that. I mean, I really don't know how else to sing. Somebody freaked me out the other day when they said, this album, your voice sounds operatic. Never in my life had anybody say that to me. That made me start getting worried. I'm going, oh, my God, that's too much.
There's always been times in your voice when it does actually show a lot of range, you know, and... you know, some of the songs like maybe Lord Have Mercy on My Soul, or maybe even High and Dry, or some stuff like that. There's always, you could tell there, you could always tell there was a really good voice.
Strong Enough to Be Gentle was pretty good. But I, you know, my sister was a singer in my family. And they'd come in after they heard Lynn sing, and we'd have company, and they'd say, "Can he sing?" And my dad'd say, "No, he can't carry a tune in a bucket." I'd wonder, well, I never tried. I don't know if I can or not, but I don't know about that. Can't sing, can't dance. That's so funny. But I love my parents. They were great parents. Nobody would imagine how good a parents Jim Gandy had. Because I seemed like a radical nonconformist. But I think that's probably what a good American is. They kind of raised me to be a good American.
Yeah, yeah.
They're both gone now, but I miss them.
Did
I'm 71. I never thought I'd get to be 71, Michael.
You still feel good at 71?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Still plenty of years.
I've lost the weight for a while. I was living with Ricky, see, and he's a gourmet chef. Went to culinary school for 2.5 years. Little by little, he cooks way too good. And I got to be dumpy dandy after a while. I got up to 199 pounds, and I was freaking out. It's like taking my luggage on stage with me, you know. But no, I'm down to trim gym now. Got my weight down. I'm happy as hell.
And Ricky's kind of a big boy.
Yeah, but he's lost weight since the last pictures you've seen.
Oh, okay.
When he became a gourmet chef, that didn't help him lose his weight.
So you said you were one of the top five money-making bands in the world for like 5 years.
72 to 77, guys, yeah. But the other four didn't have to work as much as we did to keep up. We were sort of like Motorhead, sort of. We had a big fan base, but and we played, you know, the first 3 years, 300 days a year, and we always did at least 200 days a year. And we was doing two albums a year. It was way too much. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. You didn't think we was going to last any time because you're competing against yourself when the next album comes out that year, and it opened to selling. And then, you know, I tried to tell them when they was doing a two-album-a-year deal, if you want to do a certain amount of albums, that's okay, but don't put no time limit on it because then we're destroying our sales.
Yeah, 11 albums in 5 years, right?
Huh? What'd you say?
It was like 11 albums came out over a five-year period.
Yeah, well, you know, Atlantic, when we were on Atco,
That's not even counting the Early Times album, which was a reissue of old song. So technically 12 and albums.
After we got off at Atlantic, though, we didn't do two albums a year. He realized we were going to last a little longer than that. We went to MCA in Capricorn. And we lived over that oversaturation of not only of too many records a year, but of too many gigs. You know what I mean?
Right.
Nowadays, you can't even. Back then, you could do 300 days a year, but now you can't because we've oversaturated the market. You know, people had money, and escalation had happened, and everything. What's weird is everything cost more than it ever did before to have the supplies you need for the job your family had been doing for years. And then you don't make as much. It's just really crazy. They don't care about the common people, you know. The needs of the many are more deserving than any. But it's not like Spock saying, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. That never happens anymore. The needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many because they don't care what happens to the many. It works for them the way it is, and they don't want change to happen.
That's right.
And, and they took me to Washington, D.C. once, 1978, I think it was, telling me I was going to do an interview for Radio Free Europe for our troops over there in Europe. And I got there, and there was three guys with a tape recorder and popping questions at me, and I was being interrogated, but I sort of egoed out back then. I got over myself since then, but I thought, I'm a verbal fire snatcher. There's only three of them I'm in. 6.5 hours without a glass of water. And finally, I looked in the window pane next to me. I saw foam around the corners of my mouth. My ego wouldn't take it. So I said, I'm not saying another word until I talk to my lawyer, and I don't even know his name. And so then they started being nice to me because they'd ask me questions like, are you a icon smasher, a taboo breaker? Are you here to incite the insurrection or agitate the revolution? I said, I don't know what an icon is, but we were breaking guitars, but they're not the real guitars. They look like the real guitars, but they're from Japan, only $100 a piece. And we give them away after the show, you know, parts of them. And I related to that when I saw Ray. He said, I'm going to stay country dumb. But they did tell me I was an articulate young man, and that's because I stayed in my area, and I didn't let them get me out there somewhere, you know. But it's been strange. But see, they really, because they said, would people listen to you? And then after that, they had some politicians from Arkansas came and wanted to groom me as a politician because they said, they listen to you. I said, they wouldn't listen to me as I force-feeding them stuff they don't want to hear. They're listening because I'm saying things they're afraid to say. Now, why are they afraid to say it?
Because you're being honest.
Freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is America. You know, individuality. I mean, that's both those are definitely what a dandy is about, you know, dandyism. I had one guy was interviewing me. He says, what's this thing called dandyism? He thought I was, you know, egoed out and starting a religion or something, you know. But they always thought I was trying to start something. But I was just trying to, you know, it's a sacred gathering. It's a sacred ceremony. And I get to be the master of the ceremony. And it takes both the people and the stars. And it's Underdog Heroes is actually about the underdog people that need the underdog heroes.
Right.
And there's more underdog people than there is overdogs that get to have all the money. I mean, it's just a shame that everybody has so much in common, you know, and they keep us down. They, you know, it's funny to me because they used to tell my dad and farmers what to grow. They don't do that anymore, really. But they used to tell them what to grow. And a lot of it they didn't even have a market for, and they stole it in the ocean. They just wanted to keep us busy. Huh. You know, I don't believe in voting, Michael, because here's one reason, because I had to do jury duty.
Yeah,
but no, the real reason is because I think the old money, I'm not talking about the new money like Trump or Kennedy, two generations. I'm talking about the old money, okay? About 12 families run this world and have forever. The old money ain't going to worry about who wins an election. They're going to own both sides and let us both feel involved.
Right, yeah.
And if I can figure that out, I was kicked out of school. I got Ricky kicked out of school, guilty of its association. But, you know, it's the only time it ever happened in the history of the state before or since. They kicked us out of every public school in the state of Arkansas. Oh. Knowing our parents couldn't afford private schools, they figured they'd ruined our life.
Why did they kick you
out
of school?
So I had to do something dramatic after that because Ricky had a small scholarship. He was a straight-A student.
Why'd they kick you guys out of school?
Well, you know, there's that little thing called grand larceny, and we finally got caught.
Because they
wouldn't. Nobody. They got together at the cafetorium, the grade school. And there's only in a farming community, there's only so many jobs. You can work on a farm, or you can work in a grocery store. And there was a shoe factory in Jonesboro. Or you can work in a cotton gin, but that's about it. But they all got together and decided that we're not going to hire them until they cut that hair.
Oh, you got only long hairs until.
And when the Beatles came out, see, my hair got long for one reason. My dad had a good crop, and that fall he says, hey, I don't care how long it is, keep it clean and take that load of the gin. And I came to school, and it was almost in a page boy. And they come and told me, people were my friends, told me they hated me. And the year before, they were my friends, and they said, we don't like what you stand for. And I said, well, what is that? I mean, what do I stand for? And, you know, I was going to get a cut, but my barber hadn't got back from going hunting yet. And it was just really weird. And when the Beatles came out, all of a sudden I was a communist.
Right. <yeah.
laughs> That's crazy, ain't it?
Yeah.
But I always remember that Bob Dylan said they're only a pawn in the game. And Jesus said that forgive them. They don't know what they're doing, you know. So I figured that they just was trying to not make waves or not rock the boat type of thing, you know. And shoot, I figured maybe they just couldn't swim. But it was a hell of an adventure, you know. We came out of nowhere and nobody, from where we come from, nobody ever really makes it in anything except farming and that kind of thing. And nobody does it by the time you're 21. And I was the only fool in the band that says, hey, what are you all surprised for? It was our destiny, you know. Here's a miracle.
I would imagine that you guys are revered in Arkansas now because you put them on the map.
Well, Black Oak just got a $1.9 million grant because of us and John Grisham, the author.
Yeah.
And my mom and his mother were best friends, but he was a lot younger than me. Yeah. I remember when he first went to grade school and he pissed his pants because he was so upset about something.
But, oh, wow. He
had a big brother that took the farm, and he went down and went to school, became a lawyer, and wrote books. And all the Grishams were fine to me. I mean, they always treated me okay. Except most everybody was talking about me back then because I upset people for some reason. And I wasn't at all like I am now. You know, actually, I was kind of a quiet kid that wouldn't want to make no trouble for my parents, but I got kicked out of a couple of schools. I was a little mischievous, but we did go around and, you know, we never stole from no individuals, but we did hit schools, churches, and co-ops. You know, nobody personal.
Yeah, there's that legendary story about you guys. Somebody in the band stole a PA system.
Yeah, it was me and Ricky.
And then you guys had to move to a, you moved up into the hills and lived off the land because you were hiding from the cops. Is that right?
No, but no, not that. We'd already gotten caught and got suspended sentences and everything. But we were tried as adults, even though I was 17. But I also had my first baby at 17. He's 53 now, and that'll make you feel old. But it's like that. She's the only one that put me in jail for back at child support and that kind of thing. Because I didn't, and we weren't even Black Oak yet. That was a friend of ours started that name because first place we ever practiced was in a bean elevator in Black Oak, Arkansas. And it's like we were called nobody else even because nobody else was like us around in this part of the country. We had the longest hair and all that stuff. Cause not other people. When Ricky came to school, came back from California, he was more or less a he did Beach Boys songs and stuff. He was a surfer, you know. But he had long hair too, so we were back to back. We're kind of opposites, and sometimes opposites do attract. You know, he's more of a homebody, likes his garden, he likes to cook, and he good at art. I was good at art too until I got into rock and roll and women. I mean, I'd heard about pussy and I'd heard about fucking. I knew it must be great, but I wasn't going to find out about it if I stayed in Black Oak.
Well, I'm sure you found out a lot because you were in this. In the heyday of Black Oak of the band Black Oak Arkansas, you were like considered like the biggest sex symbol like in rock and roll. I think.
Yeah, I was a sex symbol, but I'm gonna tell you something. I was married to my third wife, and I'm an extremist because I'd had also before I got married to her. I knew what being single was like, and I went a little farther than making up for lost time. I'll just say that. But I didn't get nothing. I couldn't wash off soap and water. It was a different day and age back then.
Yeah.
But when I was married, I was very married. You know. But they all got lonely because I was gone all the time. I'm giving my oath and blood before I had a dog, much less a girlfriend or a wife and kids. But like I say, three of my oldest friends now. We still care for one another, but I was never there, and they got pretty lonely. I'm sorry for that.
Well, that, you know,
but you know, I told her. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's the way. That's rock and roll. I mean, that's the way it is when you're married to a rock and roller. When he's on tour, you got to make a living, so you're gone.
Yeah, it must have been the pants because I was always ripping out my blue jeans because back then there was bell bottoms and your knees, if you're tied at the knees. And every time I'd jump off and do the splits, they'd rip out.
That's why you moved to spandex?
Yeah, well, I didn't know what it was, but, you know, we was up the lodge and my wife was coming through the channels on the TV and I told her, go back to that. And it was an opera. It was, I said, what kind of material is that, Nance? And she says, that's girdle material. They call it spandex. It's shiny on one side and dull on the other. I said, well, get some of that material and make me some pants I can wear on stage and put back pockets and a fly on you know.
Yeah.
And that's later what disco did, you know, because I wasn't going to have them. Came out the same week that David Bowie did, wearing spandex.
Yeah.
But his didn't have back pockets and fly.
Right. There's one thing I always want to know. I hope this is not an out of line question, but do you remember where you were when you the first time you saw that first Van Halen album cover?
I can't remember where I was, but I remember what I thought.
Yeah,
you know,
what did you think?
Predictable because they went and got with the same PR company, Levinson Ross, that we had had. Okay. And his all looked like poses, but they caught me moving when I was doing it. You know what I mean?
What did you think?
People posers. They put their foot up on a monitor, stay there forever. But you know, I believe it's, especially with the prices people haven't paid nowadays, they deserve sight as well as sound. And I like giving them a show.
When the first time you saw this guy on this album cover who looked exactly.
You seen him
like,
lately, Dale? You seen him lately?
Yeah, I've seen him. Yeah,
karma's a wicked thing, man. Vengeance is a dish best served cold. But I thought it was sincerest form of flattery. You know, he really—that's what he wanted to be like, that kind of front man. But at least he'd never get a show if he's going to do Jim Dandy's thing. But he found out, like everybody else does, that trying to be like Jim Dandy is a workload unless you love it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I've always got time for my fans. We did meet and greet before they called it meet and greet. I love to do my show on stage, and I can't believe it. In the old days, in the 50s, we had people down here in the South that would they would sweat blood for their audience, you know, and never think there's anything but barely good enough, you know. And it's just nowadays I can't help but think for some of my own down here in the South, they're the ones that think they're good enough to just stand flat-footed
right.
and not even give a show. And I tell them, I said, man, that ain't right, man. That ain't right. You know, nobody's that good when they're paying that much money.
Well, everything.
Put cardboards in the band and play the album on a PA if you wanted to.
Everything that David Lee Roth did was Jim Dandy. Not only.
Well, he didn't steal nothing, though. Because I didn't have it for free. I got it for nothing. I mean, if I says he stole everything you got, I said, no, he didn't. I gave it. You can have it. I told you can have it if you wanted it.
You're okay. You're okay with him with him taking your look and all that.
I was okay with Sammy sitting in the middle with us in a band, okay? I wasn't worried about what people were going to think.
Yeah.
And I'm okay. She's not a background singer. I'm grooming her to be a star and a lead singer and work the stage as good as Tina Turner, only dance better, actually. And it's like, and to me, it's, you know, when we got Tommy Aldridge as a drummer after Wayne Evans left, he asked me, he says, what's my limitation? So, what do you mean limitation? She says, what can I do or can't do? And all the guitar players and singers in Pearl, Mississippi, that's around Jackson, Mississippi, they didn't like me because I got too much attention. I said, well, you can do everything you can think of for my audience because they deserve everything you can do. Don't worry about it. You know, you can't take what it ain't mine.
Right.
God gives me that. And, you know, it's really insecurities and they cause desperation, and desperation is never cool.
So on that Rock and Roll, there's a picture of you with your two front teeth missing on the album, the live album. How'd you lose?
I ain't got a tooth in my head now, Michael.
How did you lose your front?
I mean, they're all false now. I had a dentist a friend of mine say, I'll give you a new smile.
Well, back then, how did you lose your two front teeth back then?
I got them knocked out by a coach. I was a catcher, and it was like just before high school league, but after little league and stuff like that, Kelly League, I think I called it, or something like that. But I was the best catcher they ever had, okay? And my daddy was a catcher, but I didn't know it. And, that's where the action is. And you can, you know, you can kind of give a lot of distraction to the batters if you know how. And, but I could nail second base in the back of my ear. But it was a boring game if you wasn't catching or pitching. Nobody get mad at me, but I had fun playing it till he knocked my teeth out. It was a pregame. He was knocking grounders and flies to the rest of the team, and I was catching them, throwing them, you know, handing them to him. And he stepped back. He hated me. He was redheaded and an Irish. I love Irish people most of the time. But he didn't like me, and so I didn't care for him much. Redheaded, flat top. He was a military man. I was out of uniform, but I didn't have a baseball cap on. And I had long hair. Yes, it's true. And that just didn't roll. That doggone hunt down here. And so he stepped back instead of up to hit the ball and swung it back there and hit me right on my mouth. Knocked my front two teeth off right at the guns. But it was the good Lord that done it, Michael. Because, see, he told me, if you're determined to do this, he said that, but I know that he was grooming me. We had divine intervention happening in our life the whole time. But he said, you're going to have to get rid of them two front teeth because they were buck teeth that stuck out and had a gap between them. And also, my left arm, I broke it four times in the same spot, right up by my shoulder.
Huh.
Had a piece of calcium that wouldn't solidify right. And my left arm had a chance of being short. And they found out when I broke my back about 20 years ago, fell asleep at the wheel and hit an oak tree, which rude
right.
awakening.
Yeah.
But that they found that I had curvature of the spine happening, which runs in my family. My grandfather had it. My mama had it. She got shorter instead of taller. And, scoliosis or whatever. I'd had a hump on my back, not short arm, hump on my back, buck teeth with a gap in them. Do you think I could have sold tickets that way?
Wow.
Jim Dandy to the rescue. Yeah,
man, you were a fucking good-looking dude, man.
Oh, well, I wasn't that good looking, and sure wasn't when I took my teeth out, was I? But see, the record company, that was a trick they played on me. Because the guy that took the picture fought his way through an oversold crowd, had one picture left, and I dropped my teeth right when he took it. Okay, so he takes up there and puts it as a bid for the back cover, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And they put me in there and said, you okay with this, Jim Dandy? And they saw me in it, thinking I was going to say, hell no. But they said, what do you think of this? I said, it's all right. It ain't going to hurt my sex appeal. Go ahead. But I was dying 1,000 deaths. But I'm a firm believer in that first song on this new album. You know, don't let it show.
Yeah.
Don't let them know, and don't give them the pleasure of knowing they're getting to you at all. You know, don't volunteer information on the stand.
A lot of your albums started, the first song on a lot of Black Oak albums were covers. There was Dancing in the Street on Street Party, which, by the way, Van Halen also covered.
And also Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
Yeah, but you say that David Lee Roth, I mean, come on, he even covered Dancing in the Street, so he was totally influenced by Jim Dandy. You also...
they say I've influenced lots of people, and actually there was a lot of parents that said and people that hated rock and roll said I brainwashed the kids. I tried to make it comedy and say, hey, if I brainwash them, that means the minds are cleaner. But I wasn't trying to brainwash nobody, you know. I was just trying to let them know they weren't alone.
They even
used to say, wealth of the world.
Yeah, you were a man of the people. They even said that there was backwards masking on that song When Electricity Came to Arkansas.
There wasn't.
There was
we
not.
Wouldn't have done that.
It was not. Okay. That's what I wanted
to ask. Yahtahe is a Navajo word for hello or goodbye. Watash is an Apache word for exclamation, like, oh shit, you know, or that kind of thing. And it wasn't Natas. That would have been Satin anyway. It was Watash with the W.
Watash.
It's like an Apache word for exclamation.
Huh.
Like, oh shit, you know, whatever. But I was really into Indians. I had a 22-foot tall and 22-foot around teepee when we had lodge up there. I'm fixing to get another one. No matter teepee, I'm putting in the backyard for the kids. But I'm a granddandy now. I'm a grandpa, and I love it. And shoot, and don't tell nobody that me and Sam are getting married, but it's going to be next year. They'll find out eventually, but it causes a lot of weird reactions, and we're willing to go through it, but I don't want to telegraph the punch that she'll be, you know, that'll be my fifth wife. And I believe, like my parents, it's supposed to be a forever thing, you know, and somebody to grow old with as you get older. And she was 35 and I was 70 last year. Now I'm 71 and she's fixing to be 36. But I told her that's the only time you're going to be half my age. And the wife I had before her, Donna Roots, she was 22 and I was 44 when we got married. But you know, and a lot of people say, why don't you date somebody your own age? I said, 71?
Right.
I said, you know what? You know, the world treats women. Lennon was right. They're the niggers of the world. I mean, because they have a hard road to hoe no matter what they're doing.
Right.
And if they're beautiful, then it'll be harder. And it's just, you know, I can't help it. I'm just the way I am.
That's the way men are.
I was a natural-born agitator. I agitate change, been denied.
The way men have the same taste in women, men get older, they still like young women, you know?
Well, you know, it's thing is, women get mean after they get older.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's because the way the world treats them, and they get tired of the shit, you know? But there's some that are beautiful in spite of it being that old, okay? And Jane Fonda, and a lot of them, you know, think about this. We met Dolly Parton. I mean, hell, I love Dolly. But it's just, you know, it's not that you can't sit around thinking it's that possible. You know, so they're turned against men, especially, and they're turned against the world because it's been so hard on them, you know, and they just don't have much patience left. And I can't blame them for all the way they're all treated. And, I'm not trying to get young girls. I'm not a cradle robber, none of that stuff, you know. But, you know, Sam helps me out. She's been, even though she's 35, she's been a paralegal, an accountant. She was a resident nurse, an RN in New Orleans for 13 years. Huh. And as old as me and Ricky getting, might not hurt to have a nurse out on the road.
Does Ricky live in Memphis as well?
Yes, he does.
Okay.
And he's got a brother here in Memphis, and he used to have two, but Danny Ray, he passed away, and I'm still missing. They're like my brothers, too, because I didn't have any brothers. I had two sisters. But his younger brother, Robbie, I remember when he was like almost waist high to me. And I was this height when I was in the seventh grade, the same height as my dad. And it's like, I've seen him grow up. Now he's a lot taller than me, but he's like a brother too. You know, me and Ricky have been together since the ninth grade.
Huh. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. But I'm a one band man.
still friends and still close and still going strong with Ricky Lee.
Well, we went through a time for a long time that I had people trying to blackball me because I didn't do what they wanted. All managers' dreams are to get rid of the rest of the band, keep the star,
right,
do 50-50 and pay a menial sum to the rest of the musicians,
right,
which you can't get much enthusiasm from when you do that. But I wouldn't do it, and then he got mad at me. He tried to blackball me in business, telling everybody that I was an egomaniac that couldn't be handled and wouldn't work with people. Well, I didn't want to work with him no more, but I've never been like that. And I've never made bands. I only have behind a certain piece of tape, half stage or half lights or half sound.
Yeah.
That's cheating my people.
Right.
You know.
Man, you guys were so huge. I mean, you even were one of the main bands at the very first Cal Jam.
Yes, we were.
Crazy. It was so, you guys were on top of the world.
There was no back, couldn't find a back road. There's over 300,000 people. I rode in a helicopter the size to carry a whole platoon, okay? Big helicopter. Nobody was in it but me and Linda Lovelace.
Oh,
can you imagine?
Linda Lovelace was at that show?
Yeah, Deep Throat, you know?
She rode in.
Yeah, she brought us on stage. They had the promoter paid her to come out there and say, are you ready to get hot and tasty?
She said tasty?
Yeah, but for her, that was, you know, her shtick.
Huh, yeah.
You know, she had a clit in her throat.
Wow, it's just you and Linda Lovelace on the in the.
No, no, she offered to give me a blowjob because she's famous for that, but I'm not going to be predictable. I said, no, I've had great blowjobs. I don't need one. Thank you.
Oh, really? You turned down a blowjob from Linda Lovelace. How about that? Huh.
Well, I've had great blowjobs, you know, but I never had one when I was in Black Oak.
Speaking of that, there is a story, and I don't know what the story is, but Jim Dandy and the Two Clowns in the Shower. Can you talk about that?
Whoa, but you've been talking to Ricky.
No, but I did watch the trailer.
Only the band knows about this, see? I mean, but I guess some fans found out about it from the band. But we'd been doing a hard schedule. Here's the story, okay? We've been doing a hard schedule, and the guys hadn't had no rest, and they were bummed out because we were just being overworked because the damn leader of the band, that fucking front man, told her, booking agencies, you set them up, I'll knock them down, by God, and don't say that to them money-hungry agents.
Yeah, just keep booking us gigs.
And they were wore out. You know, I was wearing out my most loyal people, and I was really insensitive about it. I should have been more thoughtful. And I was trying to make them be a little happier. Harvey Burley Jett was playing on his tuning amp and stuff back in the dressing room. We was on the boardwalk out there by, where was it? New York. Nah, I can't remember. I got brain parts now. I'm 71.
Atlantic,
but anyway,
or something.
I went in there and our road manager brought two clowns in. They were both females, okay? And they had the makeup all over them in his clown outfits. And I was in the shower because I'd been up all night before it was fixing to do this show, okay? And I got up off the bus. I was the last one to wake up. Because I didn't have as much rest because I went to bed later than everybody else did. It was daylight. But I was in the shower. So they came in and they started taking off their clothes and stuff. At first, I didn't know there was even women.
With clown makeup on.
And the clowns and the showers running and they were naked. And all of a sudden, all them colors off their face and the rest of their body were coming down and making swirly little spiral rainbows down there going down the water thing.
Right.
And I guess it was a little bit of a uplifting thing, but it was not sexually that pleasurable, if you want to know the truth, between me and you and the fence post.
But
I didn't do it because I wanted them. I did it because I was trying to get my band to laugh a little. And I'm fucking clowns. Ain't that funny?
So they were...
Okay. Hey, two clowns, they're caught by the cannibals, and the cannibals goes, does this taste funny to you? Here's another. You know why there's so many Joneses in the phone book?
Yeah, because they all have phones.
You've been to the show.
Yeah. There was somebody made a documentary on Jim Dandy and Black Oak, Arkansas. Did that movie ever come out?
Which one are you talking about?
There was a documentary. There was a Jim Dandy documentary somebody was making. You didn't know about that?
Well, there's two or three I knew about, but I didn't think anyone was that good.
Well, Shooter Jennings was in it. The Nashville.
Are you talking about the one that was? No, it couldn't have been it.
Well,
I was thinking about
it had this movie.
Kennedy.
This movie had this. I don't know if it came out, but Nashville Pussy was in it. Shooter Jennings was in it. Billy Bob Thornton was in it. All these big stars were talking about you.
Well, I vaguely remember it a little bit, but, you know, we didn't have any videos when he was trying to blackball us. The band broke up about the time at VH1 and MTV. Answer his question. And we didn't do any videos, but we'd become a household word doing Midnight Special after midnight on Saturday night.
Yeah.
And now we're fixing to do a video now, and it's,
Okay, the movie is called Jim Dandy to the Rescue, a film by Joey Skidmore.
Oh, that one. It would never lock down on any subjects at all. It was like a home movie or something.
Yeah, okay, so that never really came out.
And I don't know what the point was, because when I start talking about, the things that really happened that were, topical, and interesting. He didn't even worry about that. Some people take it for granted and think it's easier than it is to do things like that.
Right.
And it's just, and I love documentaries as a rule. I'm just about any kind of documentary. I saw it. And I didn't think it was even a finished piece of work, really.
It wasn't any good. Okay. Yeah. I just saw the trailer and I was wondering if that movie ever came out.
I wouldn't waste my money.
Yeah, okay.
If I was you, now you're my friends because I've talked to you and I like the conversation, so I don't think you ought to spend your money, friend.
Okay, I won't. There was one album, if you don't mind me asking, there was like a huge change called I'd Rather Be Sailing. Do you remember that album?
Yeah, I'd rather be doing anything but that album. We had a bunch of material that we liked, the countryside of Black Oak and things we do, like Wild Men from the Mountains, Back to the Land, Hills of Arkansas, Uncle Elijah. And we had written all these kind of songs, and I had a producer come down from Canada, and when you come back when you mix it and everything, it sounded like the Bee Gees.
Yeah, some of it was, I was going to say, some of it is almost disco.
And it was like, that's what I meant by the Bee Gees and stuff. But it was like, we hated it. But see, we did one more deal with Capricorn, and I was staying to pay the bills because my daddy taught me if you leave people holding debts that are yours, you won't get back in that business,
Yeah, that album, that
and
album
so
was
on Capricorn. I stayed
to
pay the bills, and there kept on being more bills and more bills and more bills. I was the only one to get a buyout. Everybody got at least a $50,000 buyout, but not me.
Huh. Well, why not?
That's all right. Because I was the last one standing, last man standing.
Okay. Was that
I mean, it was over. My guys, when they haven't, I'm not convinced these managers, I'm over it as far as that goes. I don't, no vendettas, no vengeance, is my fault, okay? And I'm sorry for it. But when I finally figured out when Dirty and there was other boys, Stanley and them wanted to, they just going to quit. And I said, man, don't let him run and go off. Let's run him off. And they said, man, we're wore out. And we just are. Can't do it no more. And they cried with me and hugged me and, when I was left by myself up there, but I had to try to stay long to pay the bills and everything, and then I finally left and didn't want to do anything because everybody said, what happened? And I didn't really know what to tell them.
Yeah.
And it's just, we had all of the band members had a great relationship with each other, but I enabled the agencies to overwork us to where people were just wore out. But and the manager got a little bit too carried away with power and greed. And greed's an insatiable thing. You can never get enough once you want to get more.
I thought maybe that you bought a boat because that album cover, you're all in a boat. I thought maybe you bought a boat and retired.
That was Phil Walden's boat. And I'd never sailed one, but I hooked right into the wind and they said I was a natural. We weren't that happy doing that album.
Yeah.
We was going to say, I'd rather be doing anything than this album, but that's right. A little bit, our fans wouldn't have understood that. But, it's, I have no regrets, but I have quite a few things I don't think I'd do the same way if I did it again.
Like,
and
what,
I'm still doing it, so.
What would you have done different?
Well, I don't want to say it in the way of, well, let's say what I just talked about, is that I wouldn't have let that kind of an album or that kind of producer be there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have let the manager have as much power as he had it. I was the only way he had it. And I was the last one who found out all the rest of them were being abused. And, you know, because they didn't know how to tell me. They didn't want to hurt my feelings. Sure. But things, they should have talked to me. Because, I mean, together, we could have done anything.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is, you know. That's why I wrote that song, We Help Each Other. We help each other, help ourselves, or whatever we want, if we keep it together with ourselves, you know. And it's gotten now to where people don't really believe in the golden rule, you know, do unto others what you want to do unto you. Because they're afraid they're putting sucker across their forehead. And people are going to do you before you do them. That ain't very Christian. But I'm in the baby's room right now, and he's crying his ass off.
Oh, I can't hear.
Because he knows I'm in here. I'm his main man. But, you know, it's been a great adventure. And I stopped for a few years, but I can't not play. And if somebody tried to keep me from doing what I love to do, I'd have to kill him. I don't want to be a murderer, but I'd have to give it. It's easier to kill them than just beat them up.
Do you have enough money to retire if you had to?
There is no retirement in being Jim Dandy.
You're going to do this until you die.
No, I don't have that much money, but I'm not hungry. I'm not doing without. You know, the money was. It's they call it white collar crime, but it's like a shell in a pea trick with three shells in a pea.
Right.
And he was investing in land deals and everything else, and he couldn't trace the money, you know.
Yeah.
I can't unplug this.
Did you guys sell that compound that you all, didn't you buy like a huge compound that you all lived on?
It was up in the Ozarks in, around Mountain Home and, it was around a lake, Bill Shaw's Lake, man-made lake.
Did you guys hunt and fish? Do you hunt and fish?
I don't miss a fish fry, but I never really liked fishing that much. But Ricky and Dirty and him, they even used to be able to ride in canoes. I don't know if they do that anymore. But Dirty still lives around here, too. He's out there about, 30 miles away from Memphis. And he just wanted to retire from the road. He came back after we got rid of the manager for a few years, but I really, really am close to all the old guys. You know, we lost Stanley Knight, Jimmy Henderson, and Ruby.
Yeah.
And that's why on Channeling Spirits, that song was written on a dare. A friend of mine that's a guitar player said, looked at me in the eyes and said, somebody ought to write a song called Channeling Spirits. And I said, well, hey, man, I ain't afraid of a challenge. I'll try it. I never turned down a dare. But it was harder than I thought it would be. It still left out people I wanted to put in there, you know, Jerry Garcia and a few others. It was going to be too long.
Yeah, the song has...
And the last people I mentioned was Stanley Knight, Jimmy Henderson, Ruby Starr, and then we did Ruby's Heartbreaker right after that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of heart in this album.
Yeah, what's your favorite song on this new album, Underdog Heroes?
Well, different ones I like for different reasons.
I like
Underdog Heroes is really one of my favorites, but and Devil's Daughter, I wrote that one, you know, and that's a metal song, and I played the riff, with an octave pedal, because I like Rage Against the Machine, shit like that, and they sometimes have it on the guitar and the bass, octave pedals, but. I wrote it for Sammy because there's so many girls in Memphis that hated her, didn't even know her because they were intimidated by her. She was too good looking and too smart. And I wrote it because that way even her haters would like it. She's not the devil's daughter. People got to have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, like Hot Nasty was a joke, too. Sort of like Frank Zappa doing...
Right, of course.
titties and beer.
Right.
When we finally met, he's one of my heroes. He said, I love Hot Nasty. I said, I love titties and beer and everything. We went on from there. And I did finally ask him, why did you ever produce Captain Beefheart? Because that's one of the only critics thing that gets me, that hurts me. He says, well, we haven't done personal. He wasn't that, he's not a singer and he's not a poet. And nothing like that, but we in school together and he wanted to make albums, so I helped him make one. As simple as that.
Yeah.
You know? And it wasn't about me. As Rick used to say for many years, it ain't all about you, Jim Dandy. People say it is.
My favorite songs.
I got over myself. You got to get over yourself. I got a song called Get Over Yourself I'm going to do someday. Because I got a song with my name in it and everything like that. But it is a Christian way. To be selfless is it's a good thing to think about others, yeah. To be courteous enough to think about others. And everybody ought to as much as they can. I know their patience is worth the end. And all I can say is you're not alone and never give up, give in or give out, and don't volunteer information.
I would imagine that everybody likes Jim Dandy.
Oh, I don't think everybody likes Jim Dandy. In fact, I know that everybody don't like Jim Dandy. I was shot at about 4 times in our career on stage. And had death threats by guys who never even knew me, but their newlywed wife quit them when they saw us on stage. Said, I want somebody like that. And so they don't kill me. Like, I didn't know her.
Oh, yeah. Because the women liked you so much, the jealous boyfriends.
Well, you know, it's kind of like that, but it's just, I never was that confident women like me that much. You know, that's not usually the kind of woman, the kind of man that a woman would be caring about. You know, a braggadocious, self-centered, kind of vulgar person. But I didn't wear them pants to show off. I didn't have that much. I mean, my dick is normal. I mean, I had a lot of balls. But it wasn't about that. They were easier to do my show in, and all the baseball players and football players wear them now, but all the women don't go, ooh, ah. If they do, they do it, you know, privately. Yeah. And I myself, the kind of woman that likes that kind of guy, I don't really get that interested in it. Because I wasn't trying to be that kind of guy. I really wasn't. When Hot and Nasty was a joke, and then they kept having me do songs like that I didn't, you know, Ahmet Erdogan himself, you know, chairman of the board of Warner Brothers Electric and Atlantic, came. He signed us. We were the fifth thing, I think, in his life that he signed personally. And I'm honored. I was, you know, I'm undeserving. But he came and said, man, I know you guys want to try, you know, you got attention, you're trying to impress the world, but with these songs like Keep the Faith and all this stuff, and if an angel came to see you, would you make it for your loan? But can you just do a little bit of a sex song with a sense of humor, you know, like right. A Hot and Nasty?
Yeah.
So I wrote Getting Kind of Cocky and Gigolo in the same day.
And Fistful
in the hotel room did.
Fistful of Love, there's a good one, too.
What was it?
Fistful of Love.
Fistful of Love, yeah, Ruby Ruby. Oh, God. Rube.
That's a great one.
You know, I don't really think about it.
Yeah.
I'm not that anal.
Well, Jim Dandy, I can't thank you enough for doing this. I mean, it was really so cool to talk to you. Underdog Hero is the name of the album. What is your my favorite songs on the album? Arkansas Medicine Man, I like a lot. And
That is a unique song. And I mean, it's not about me. A lot of people think it is, but it's about Sammy's grandpa, who's full blood Cherokee.
Oh, she's a Native American.
After my dad passed away. He was a chief by that time. He was at a reservation up in Wyoming. Her grandpa named Junior Barnes. And my daddy kind of knew him. See, the thing about Sammy is her dad was born and raised in Lepanto, Arkansas, which is 11 miles from Black Oak. And he was about my age. And my dad knew her grandfather, Junior. But when my dad died, it's funny. We was at a friend's house where they had two or three car garage. They turned into a practice room, right? And he hadn't talked to her or called her since she was 8 years old. And he called her while we was there. She had her cell phone, of course. But he told her, is Jim Mangrum in there? You know, my last name. Yeah. I always put it behind Danny, but hardly anybody, nobody noticed it. Right. But she says, yeah. And she says, Tenem is daddy, is with his mama. And my daddy never went to church, okay? And it's like, he never really thought he was going to get to be where my mama was. You know, my mama taught Sunday school to three generations of families from the tri-state area. And she was a great person. And my dad was a great guy. But he told me that. And he said, your dad said, don't worry about missing the funeral. He would have liked to missed it too.
Yeah, right.
But he's a shaman as well as being a chief.
Huh. Is she
pretty pup?
Is Sammy full-blooded Native American?
No, not full-blooded Native American, because her mother wasn't. Her dad was.
Okay.
And she got plenty of Cherokee in her though. Yeah. And I love Indians, and I probably will be a honorary member of some tribe. Maybe might be Cherokee, because a lot of them have. But I've had offers because they know that I don't want to be buried. I don't want to be burnt. I just want to be put up on a scaffold and get uglier and uglier and let birds eat my eyeballs out. So, and to me, that's just, it's not that I'm trying to, that's just the way it ought to be. Go back to nature.
Right.
Birds got to eat too.
Yep.
Josie Wales.
Do you have any, do you have any plans to tour for this album?
Heavy Prince, God dang.
You have any plan? Do you guys have plans to tour behind this album?
Well, we're pitching to go out to, in July. We're doing that thing. It's the anniversary of Woodstock, and we're also after the thing they do up there where it was. We're going to do like 30 dates across the United States, so people didn't have a chance to go up there to see it, you know. And we're doing that, and very happy about that. Man, somebody just fired a big gun over Memphis. Oh God!
Are you going to come to the West Coast? You think?
Oh, of course we are.
Well, I hope.
Of course we are.
I hope you come to San Francisco, because if you do, I'll be at the
show. Oh, that's the first date, I think.
Well, San Francisco? Where in San Francisco?
I don't know yet. I'm talking to the Woodstock people in the next 2 days, but I'll let you know as soon as I know. Sam's got your phone number, or just on, it's on her phone here. I'll try to let y'all know and get you in with whoever you got.
I will be at that show for sure. I would love to be at that show.
But everybody's been, it's been overwhelming how many people love this album.
Yeah, it's a fun album. I mean, when you hear
We always had to work for it, you know. We didn't ever have this kind of reaction.
Like I said,
but they never let me and Ricky produce them.
When you hear the great Jim Dandy singing, I mean, what's not to like? I mean,
the great Jim Dandy. Jesus Christ. I don't believe I'm great. I'm happy. I'd love to do what I do. And, you know, Mark Twain said if a person gets to make a living doing something they love, they never have to work another day in their life.
That's right.
But didn't he realize all the miles he had to do when he had to pay all them bills and go on that tour? It's the miles in between. It's the work. But I'll do anything to do what I do. And someday when we're going to get big again, I'm going to shake the world like a maraca again, because I love it and that's what I'm good at. But the thing is, it's, it's too good not to do. And I don't want to retire. Even if I was wealthy, I believe I want to get it to a point where I do a people's price. And I'll be putting a bullseye on the back of my head when I do that. I have to watch out when I get off any elevators. Because there's a lot of people, not just the business people, but the musicians are used to a lot of things. But I don't think you got to worry about that kind of stuff. Because to me, the main thing is keep the main thing the main thing. That's the main thing. The main thing is I don't want nobody to miss our show. Okay? And I'm going to be a people's place to where everybody has to get bigger places.
Right. Yeah.
But, ain't no sense in being greedy. I give it away. People don't have to steal it.
Well, Jim Dandy, thank you so much for
doing
this. I'm not going to take too much more of your time. I really appreciate you doing this. It's been an honor to talk
to you.
Oh,
man. It's an honor that you think it's an honor, you know?
Well,
it really is.
I wish you all the luck with the new album, Underdog Heroes. It's a quality album. And
hey, did you like Sean Lane, the cut we give with Sean Lane?
Yes.
On the Doing to Others?
That guitar playing on Do Unto Others is like insanely fast. That's like,
oh yeah, he was, you know, everybody says he was most likely the fastest guitar player ever lived. He passed away since then, but we found an old DAT and we doctored it up where it could be with the rest of the, yeah, the songs, because to me it showed the old fashioned boogie type of rock and roll we was doing that song in, but Sean showed the future, you know, make it futuristic.
Right.
And they freaked out over it at California. Cleopatra did when they heard it. So they always heard about, everybody heard about when Sean was with us for 3 years, from time he was 15 to 18. Now I was his legal guardian. But they never really heard anything that was on an album. So not only did we show him Sean and what that was like, but Ruby's Heartbreaker, you know, we wanted people, we wanted closure for a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of those songs at the end, on the, there's more songs on the CD than there is on the LP, because the LP, you know, like the old days, you only so many minutes, so you decide right. for it to right. be hot, you know.
Yeah.
But and they had 8 songs on it. But the CD's got
12.
She's got the Tommy Bolin song, which she told me you love me. And it's got Love for Rent. It's got strip bars. And then it's got 12 Bar Blues. It's a great blues song.
Yeah.
But it was a great idea, Ricky, because 12 bars on Beale Street, 12 bars with 12 bartenders trying to drink her off your mind.
And, right.
And then Johnny Won't Be Good was the story of the birth of rock and roll.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm so tickled to think that y'all like it. And we just, you know, all I can do is try to make you happy. So if y'all ain't happy, I ain't happy.
Well, I'm happy, Jim Dandy Mangrum. I really, and I'm thank you for putting it out. I appreciate it. And I'm glad that you are still in the rock and roll world.
Oh, not only am I in the rock and roll world, man, I got to play on a loud metal song. I wrote the riff.
There you go.
It took me 2 months to learn how to play the riff. And then I had to take another 2 months to learn how to sing at the same time I'm playing the riff. But if you want something bad enough, you never give up until you get it.
Exactly. Well, Jim Dandy, thank you so much for doing this. I'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your night. Thank you so much for doing
thank
this.
You.
I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I enjoy talking with you.
All right.
And you know, as soon as I get information on where we'll be playing, I'll let you know.
Great. All right. Thanks. All right. Good luck. And
you're my friend now we've talked.
Oh,
but
I'm
sometimes, you know, it's being my friend, you can get the association. It can be kind of a handicap sometimes.
Well,
so if it gets you in trouble, say, I don't know him, man.
No, I got your back, Mr. Mangrum. Nobody will fuck with Jim Dandy if I'm in the room. Although I'm small, I can't really fight that well, but I'll do my
best.
Well,
you know, I'm 5'8" and a half, and right now I'm about 160 pounds, but I'm not fat. I ain't got no gut, no love handles, none of that. But I'm still a moving target, but not quite as fast as I used to be. When I broke my back hitting that tree, they found that I was going to have that curvature of the spine, and so they put an 8-inch piece of titanium in my back. And they told me I couldn't do splits no more, that kind of thing. So when I first started doing splits, because we didn't know how to play, we weren't worth shit. So that's what people paid to come see me, wanting to see me bust my nuts on the floor.
On,
you know,
a show.
Actually, the harder you hit the stage during the splits, the better you look coming up.
That's right. Yeah.
But I could have quit doing them, I guess, when we started getting good. But hell, people liked it, and so I kept doing it.
Yeah. Why stop putting on the show? That was the great thing about Black Oak, Arkansas. Everybody in the band was rocking out, jumping around.
Yeah, and Dirty Darty, our bass player, he was a lead singer in a band called The Letchers, and I always thought that was a cool name.
Yeah.
But I told him one night, I said, you're the bass player meant to be with us. And what nobody knew is he always wanted to be a bass player. And he was probably a better singer than me, I thought. But he didn't want nothing to do with having to talk to the audience or be a master of ceremony, any of that stuff. He would have took a bullet from me, but he was a paranoid schizophrenic, certified.
Huh.
But me and him always got along great. I mean, back in the day, whenever we had the longest hair in the world, and everybody was against long hairs down south, okay? They would never do nothing until after we got done with our show. But everybody's, all the rednecks were waiting to beat our ass and stuff like that. Well, I'd go meet Danger before it got to my people. And, you know, everybody in the band was up behind me all the way, you know, got my back. But the only one that I hear saying, you think you're going to have all the fun and walking beside me, and I'm going out there. I wasn't planning on letting that fight in. They're supposed to get everything packed and we jump in it as they're driving by, you know. But Gertie would say, you think you're going to have all the fun? I said, this ain't fun.
Well, that guy was a ripping bass player. I mean, the bass on Electricity Came to Arkansas, that's amazing bass lines.
Wait till you hear a bass player now who used to sell equipment to Dirty at a place called the Guitar Center here in Memphis.
Yeah.
And strings and things, what they called it then. But, and he's a great bass player. I mean, he's a big fan of Dirty's, you know, and that's good to have whenever.
Yes.
Because I'm always going to talk good about my boys. You know, my first Black Oak was very loyal. We went through a lot of shit together. Really, all we did when we went in the hills after I got busted and got out of jail, they made me sign my son's name away and give him, he had a different name. His stepfather's name, Jimmy Spiegelman. So he became a little Jimmy Spiegelman instead of a little Jimmy Mangum. And I finally got his custody back later on. But we was running from the law because I have that child support and everything, and we went up and stayed in a cave for about 3 days, and that's where the story got started up there in New Ozarks. But I've really had a good time talking to you.
Well, it was nice to talk to you too, Jim Dandy. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to see you when you come out to San Francisco.
It's going to be a good show, I guarantee you that.
I have no doubt about that. All right, say goodbye.
That's talking to people like yourself, man. There's nothing else I can do but give you a great show. I got to. I mean, there's no other alternative.
That's right.
But, hell, I've always felt lucky to be able to do this anyway. I always thought Elvis had more cosmic fun than any human I'd ever seen. And in fourth grade, when you stand up next to your desk saying what you want to be when you grow up, I told him, I said, I want to have Elvis's job. He just having more fun than anybody I'd ever seen. They laughed at me, so I started crying. I was only in fourth grade. And they said, who the hell do you think you are? And I said, it ain't who I are. It's who I'm going to be. It's America, damn it.
Yeah, there you go.
But that's part of what gave me the will to never give up.
Yeah. Well, give my regards.
But have a good day, and whatever you do, behave whatever behave is.
I will try my best. And give my regards to Sammy B as well.
All right. I will do it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye, Mikey.
There you go. I hope you could keep up with that, friends. Jim Dandy, the great Jim Dandy Mangrum. Wow. Woo. What a guy, man. I love that. I love that dude. I can't tell you, man. Wow. I just talked to Jim Dandy Mangrum. All right. Well, thank you for listening, friends. I hope you enjoyed that. I know I did. All right. I'm going to close out with something from Street Party. When I heard this new album, Underdog Heroes, I pulled out my vinyl of Street Party, and I had not listened to this album, since I was probably 16 years old. And I put on this song called Everybody Wants to See Heaven, Nobody Wants to Die. It was like I just heard it yesterday, and I was singing along to it. I've remembered all the words. So that's what I'm going to play for you to close out the show. Everybody Wants to See Heaven. Nobody Wants to Die. Get the new album, Underdog Heroes. I'll post a link to where you can buy it at rockandrollgeek.com. And thank you, everybody, for the donations to the Rock and Roll Geek Show. I really appreciate it. Please keep the donations coming. Without your donations, this show would die a horrible, putrid, stench-filled death. And this show is a value-for-value model, as you know. Was that worth anything to you? It was to me. So if you got any value out of that, I just ask you to donate whatever you think, friends. All right. Here is Everybody Wants to See Heaven, Nobody Wants to Die. Rockandrollgeek.com is where you can find the show. You can find me on the Twitter, R&R Geek. Find me on the Instagram, Rockandrollgeek, don't ask. Find me on the Facebook, R&R Geek. Email me, rockandrollgeek@gmail.com. Let Jim Dandy Mangrum know that you heard about him on the Rock and Roll Geek Show, on Michael Butler's show, and so he didn't think he wasted an hour of his time or an hour and 15 minutes of his time talking to a podcaster. All right, thank you for listening, friends. I hope you enjoyed it. Here is Black Oak, Arkansas from Street Party. Everybody Wants to See Heaven. Nobody wants to die.
Everybody wants to make it. Nobody wants to try. Everybody wants to see heaven. Nobody wants to die. People want to live forever, but they don't. see hereafter. They're so afraid their life will end. Everybody wants to make it. Nobody wants to try. Everybody wants to see heaven. Nobody wants to die. Why do people look to the dark side? Oh my God, I wish I knew why. If they'd only look to the bright side, there would be less reason to cry. Man-made seconds, man-made minutes, man-made hours, days, months, and years. Man believes there's a hereafter, but running out of time he fears. Everybody wants to make it, nobody wants to try. Everybody wants to see heaven, nobody wants to die. Why are people so nearsighted? Can't they see past the nose on their face? Have some faith in the great creator. For everything there's a time and place. Everybody wants to make it. Nobody wants to try. Everybody wants to see heaven. Nobody wants to die. There once was a great man, it is said, and he was a greater man than I. The way to conquer death, he just said, you must know how to die. Everybody wants to make it. Nobody wants to try. Everybody wants to see heaven. Nobody wants to die. Everybody wants to make it. Nobody wants to try. Everybody wants to see heaven. Nobody wants to die.
It's a rock and roll geek train wreck.
No matter what they do to you.